Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 27, Understanding Material Nature, Text 25.
Yataya pratibuddhasya
Yataya pratibuddhasya
Prasvapo bhavanartabrit
Prasvapo bhavanartabrit
Saiva pratibuddhasya
Saiva pratibuddhasya
Navai mohaya kalpati
Navai mohaya kalpati
Yata
Yata
As
He
Indeed
Apratibuddhasya
Apratibuddhasya Of one who is sleeping
Of one who is sleeping
Prasvapaha
Prasvapaha
The dream
The dream
Bahunartabrit Bearing many inauspicious things. Saiva.
Saiva.
That very dream.
Pratibuddhasya.
Of one who is awake. Na.
Not.
Vay.
Certainly.
Mohaya.
Mohaya.
For bewildering.
Kalpate.
Is capable. Translation. In the dreaming state, one's consciousness is almost covered and one sees many inauspicious things. But when he is awakened and fully conscious, such inauspicious things cannot bewilder him. Purport. In the condition of dreaming, when one's consciousness is almost covered, one may see many unfavorable things which cause disturbance or anxiety. But upon awakening, although he remembers what happened in the dream, he's not disturbed. Similarly, the position of self-realization or understanding of one's real relationship with the Supreme Lord makes one completely satisfied. And the three modes of material nature, which are the cause of all disturbances, cannot affect him. In contaminated consciousness, one sees everything to be for his own enjoyment. But in pure consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, he sees that everything exists for the enjoyment of the Supreme Enjoyer. That is the difference between the dream state and wakefulness. The state of contaminated consciousness is compared to dream consciousness, and Krishna consciousness is compared to the awakened state of life. Actually, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, the only absolute enjoyer is Krishna. One who can understand that Krishna is the proprietor of all the three worlds, and that he's the friend of everyone, is peaceful and independent. As long as a conditioned soul does not have this knowledge, he wants to be the enjoyer of everything. He wants to become a humanitarian or a philanthropist and open hospitals and schools for his fellow human beings. This is all illusion, for one cannot benefit anyone by such material activities. If one wishes to benefit his fellow brother, he must awaken his dormant Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious position is that of Pratibuddha, which means pure consciousness. The awakening of pure consciousness is happening on different levels. One may look at the verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Bhavanam Jananamante Jnanavamam Prapadyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. And one can explain that verse in different ways. The verse means that after many births, one comes to the point of this knowledge that Vasudeva is everything, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. And one could give an explanation where it means that we understand that Vasudeva, Krishna, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or we could take another level of explanation and say Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that Vasudeva has become everything for us and that there's just nothing else that is any interest. One is the perspective of the sadhaka, and the other one is the perspective of the liberated soul, who is fully self-realized. The sadhaka means the practitioner. So, when we speak about this dream state and this state of wakefulness, In one sense, it's very easy to be awoken. It doesn't require a huge adjustment. It simply requires to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the Supreme Proprietor. He is Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, Suridam, Sarva Bhutanam. He is the controller of all the planets, the friend of all living beings, and Bhuktaram Yajnatapasam. He is the ultimate enjoyer of everything. And if one has understood these things, Krishna the ultimate enjoyer of everything, Krishna the supreme Ishvara, the supreme Lord of everything, and Krishna the friend of all living beings, then one has sufficiently understood the position of Krishna. And one can immediately be situated in an awoken state. Immediately. One can be Krishna conscious. One can, at that stage, dedicate all one's activities to Krishna. And that in itself is only a beginning. Because even if we dedicate all our activities to Krishna, internally we are not focused on Krishna at all. Internally, our minds are still here, there, everywhere, attracted to so many other things than Krishna. And this is where the dreaming still continues internally. Although externally one may be in an awoken state, but internally the dreaming continues. And this is, this is maybe the most interesting state to discuss. Right? I mean, we can speak about the pure awoken state, and we'll get there also, but a little later. And we can speak about the completely sleeping state and point at those who somehow or other are just sleeping and they don't know anything. I have no transcendental knowledge and all that. But we'll leave that for what it is. Rather we want these two things. It is very interesting that it is said in psychology that when a person is practicing a certain activity externally because the person believes that this activity is beneficial on intellectual strength, that is very a precarious position. When internally there is still all kinds of pushings of mind and senses, then one can try to constantly cut these pushings, but one is at risk. One is at risk of what is called a Schattendurchbruch. The Schattendurchbruch is something where from the darkness within, suddenly, unexpectedly, something seems to almost break through with a force of its own. Something suddenly out of control, and one suddenly acts in a degraded manner, although one had no intention. The Bhagavad Gita also addresses this point, just as almost against one's will, as a boat is swept away by the wind. So this is a something to consider, that the internal state of consciousness cannot just be left alone, and that it's all right to just do the right things. I'm okay. I'm doing everything. I'm doing only the right things. I never do anything wrong. Therefore, I'm Krishna conscious. No, not at all. Rather, the work has not been completed. It is the internal change that has to also take place. Now, there are two ways in which that occurs. Anartapasanam saksat bhakti yoga madoksa jay. The activities itself, they are bringing about a change. It's like the comic Woody Allen made a statement and said that if you go to church, that doesn't make you into a Christian. He says, just as when you go into a garage, you don't become a car. That was his point. So I thought that was, of course, not fully acknowledging the transcendental nature of spiritual activity, and that they are in itself transforming. Wasn't recognizing that devotional service transforms. It wasn't recognizing this verse, anartapasanam saksa bhakti yoga adoksa jay, that all anartas are being destroyed by devotional service. In maya shakta mana parta yogi union madasraya, that one, by taking shelter of Krishna, develops attachment to Krishna. That was not considered. So maybe by going into the garage, one gradually becomes a car after all. It could be, yeah, if we are looking at it. So the external activity is certainly having an effect upon our consciousness. But it's not all. This is not all there is. There is also an element of making a conscious endeavor. It's not that everything is automatic. One has to also consciously embrace Vaishnava behavior. It is nice when we see how Vaishnavas greet each other, how hands are being folded as a sign of humility, as a sign of respect. That culture has to be embraced. One has to get off his high horse, so to speak. One can chant, but if we stay on a high horse, then it will be hard. It will just be very hard for that automatic purification to take full effect, because we are maintaining material attachments. That is the tenth offense in the matter of chanting the holy name, and thus the result of chanting the holy name will be delayed. So we do have to make internal adjustments, and we do have to make a conscious effort. So in that sense, psychology is relevant. It's not that we can then just write off all psychology as bogus. This is not, has nothing to do with us because we are only practicing devotional service. No. There is an element of making a conscious effort to adjust our state of consciousness, which is really a field that nowadays has been sort of designated to psychology. Therefore, if someone comes up with terminology like Vedic psychology, then that's not out of place, because the Bhagavatam is filled with such explanations about the functioning of the mind. Fundamentally, it is said thinking, feeling, and willing. These are the functions of the mind. And in that progression, in other words, thinking first, thinking about an object, then we develop emotions about it. I want it. Oh yes, this is nice, good. Feeling, willing. Thinking, feeling, nice, willing, want. So in this, thinking, feeling, willing, are the functions, the function of the mind, and then accepting, rejecting, sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting, rejecting, etc.
accepting, rejecting, which things we want. And then, taking it a step further back, go to the financial root, the existential root. I somehow saw the word financial somewhere on the page, wrong in my mind.
Psychological Freudian slip.
That was interesting, yeah. Where did that go? Going to the existential root. Think about that. The existential root then is Anandamaya Vyasat, that the soul by nature is pleasure seeking. Pleasure seeking. So that's what drives us. Always looking for pleasure. And then the mind kicks in. The mind, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, has taken over the function of the soul. In the spiritual world, there's no such thing as a mind. Right? There's no mind. There's no, because there's no subtle body. In the spiritual world, the soul, there's no gross body, there's no subtle body. It is just one. One's very self is the soul. Therefore, thinking, feeling, and willing on the spiritual plane are happening on the platform of the soul. So that's one reason to go back to the spiritual world, to get rid of the mind. So it is said that as one is making spiritual advancement, the mind dissolves. The word dissolves is used. So it's interesting. Our mind is dissolving. Well, I don't mind, personally. Let it dissolve. Because the mind is described as a sapatni, a co-wife. See, it's not a wife, a co-wife. Yeah. So a co-wife is always trouble, obviously. Once there's co-wife, co-wife is like sort of the spare wheel, right? And she doesn't like to be. So she is like always some disturbance is there. So it has to be satisfied. Difficult. So the mind is something that pulls in the opposite direction, in other words. We are here with that mind, and it's not exactly cooperating with the destiny of the soul. The mind is unfortunately having a different agenda than the soul. And that creates all these problems. And therefore, it creates within us an internal conflict, which sooner or later will emerge. If we give in too much to the mind, then we'll have this fundamental dissatisfaction. There's just something unfulfilled. Trying hard, trying many things, but no fulfillment. Because fulfillment is only possible when the soul is properly situated in relationship with Krishna. So as soon as we give in to the mind, bhayam dvitiya abhinivesita syat, anxiety. There is dvitiya, there's two. There's two goals, two aims. The aim of the soul, the aim of the mind, or two, there's Krishna's interest and other interests, and therefore anxiety. And that anxiety may be buried under layers of so-called enjoyment. I'm enjoying so much, I'm so happy. No, I have everything I want. I'm completely peaceful. I have everything I could possibly dream of. I'm satisfied. I mean, everything is here. But meanwhile, underneath, the anxiety is lurching, right, and just remains. And the result is that one is not fulfilled.
One has everything. One has everything that one should logically have to be satisfied. I mean, logically, there's nothing lacking. Nothing. And that's called Sweden. Sweden would be maybe the country where you could, which is the emblem of this, where you say everything is cared for. In a very caring society, everything cared for, everything arranged, nicely arranged. No one can say things are not nicely cared for and arranged. Whatever it is, there is some provision and it's nicely done, nicely cared for. But the emptiness, the emptiness is also very prominent within, and the depression and all those kind of things are also very much present because of these dynamics. Then, because there is no transcendental knowledge, and because there is no knowledge about the ultimate goal of life, then how else can that that emptiness be filled? When we're living in a perfect society where everything is perfectly arranged and yet feeling empty, how else can that vacuum be filled then with sinful activity, hidden sinful activity? So yeah, that's then what happens. Then hidden forbidden enjoyment. So in this way, we can appreciate how we are wandering between these states of consciousness in the conditioned state, and how Krishna consciousness is to be nourished for it to awaken and for it to enter internally. The chanting of Hare Krishna is undoubtedly an essential element to awaken our Krishna consciousness internally, because the holy name will naturally awaken love for Krishna. Then additionally, the Srimad Bhagavatam is very essential, very essential. This Srimad Bhagavatam is really what we what we require. Prabhupada's complaint was that they are distributing the books, but they are not reading the books. That was there. When Sanatana Goswami in the Stavamala is stating that Bhagavatam is his constant companion, then it's not only an external thing, because it doesn't mean that he's always reading Bhagavatam, walking day and night in the corridors with the book in his hand, as one could see monks pacing in medieval monasteries and walking with the book. Now that is very good, by the way. I mean, to walk with the book in the corridors, in the rooms, or sit with the book, or spend time with the book. But it also means one must internalize the book. One must live the book. One must not just read the book. One must read the book, but then one must live the book. One must change his life according to the injunctions of the book, and one must spend his time in remembering Krishna. Ultimately, smartavyam satatam vishnavi smartavyam ajatasit sarvavidini sedashu etiyo etivakinkaram. The purpose of all rules and regulations to always remember Krishna and never forget him. So somehow or other, we are engaging in these activities. So, we should read the Bhagavatam to the point that Bhagavatam becomes part of us. That Bhagavatam entered into our consciousness. That Bhagavatam is with us all the time. That the personalities of Bhagavatam, these personalities are just our close associates, just like
It is described Swayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumar Kapilo Manu Pranado Janako Bhismo Balir Vayasaki Vayam. So these are the 12 Mahajans. So these 12 Mahajans are identified as the 12 great personalities of Swayambhu Lord Brahma, the self-born, Narada, Narada, Shambhu Lord Shiva, and four Kumaras, Kapila, Manu. All these personalities are mentioned. And why these personalities in particular are identified as the 12 Mahajans? Because there are more, right? There are more great personalities, that one. But these personalities particularly are very, very prominently described in the Bhagavatam. These are like leading personalities, but of course there are many others. But you know, Narada is the spiritual master again and again. Man, he appears again and again. It's like the four Kumaras are very important. Right? When we are, especially from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, are we getting that extra dimension? Because at one point we come to the higher regions in the universe, beyond the heavenly planets. In the heavenly planets, there is still enjoyment in as the focus, but very pious, very pious. Then we come to still higher regions, the Maharjana Tapa Loka, and then Brahma Loka. So Tapa Loka is described. And in Tapa Loka, there the people, when Gopa Kumar comes to Tapa Loka, everyone is just meditating. They're all day just meditating. So Gopa Kumar is sort of feeling that that is not satisfactory. Because Gopa Kumar says, I don't just want to meditate. I don't just want to meditate on the Lord. I want to see the Lord. I want to see Him. The sages in Siddha Loka, they're saying that you're wasting your time. You're wasting your time. Why you want to see? The eye is just a tool which sends signals to the brain. So what's the point? It is happening in the brain. It's not happening in the eye. The eye is just the tool and then sends the picture to the brain. It's in the brain that it's happening. Therefore, just meditate. There's no need to see with the eye. And Gopa Kumar said, yeah, but I still want to see the Lord. So, anyway, that is the point that comes up. Then one day, an effulgent personality appears. An effulgent personality appears. And everyone is so pleased to see this personality. It is Sanat Kumar. And Sanat Kumar, he is appearing because the four Kumaras, they are part-time in this Tapa Loka as the inspiring deity, and part-time in the Vaikuntha region because they're Shakti Avesh avatars, so it is explained. So they're in both places. And it's very interesting. In both places. So they're in the spiritual world and at the same time in Tapa Loka. That is. And then of course Gopa Kumar wasn't satisfied because. And that was explained then by Sanat Kumar. He highlighted that, if I remember it right. A little fake on that point. But anyway, I'm not quite sure who gave the final conclusion. But the final conclusion was that that the ras, that meditating is one thing, but seeing is adding in ras, and therefore it was not useless to just see or to smell the Lord or to hear the Lord.
It is rather increasing the experience. Yes, we want to meditate on the Lord fully, but we also want to see the Lord at the same time. We hear about the Lord, we see the Lord at the same time. It has been made very easy by Krishna kindly appearing in the deity form. That's why it's nice that Bhagavatam is discussions happen in front of the deities, and that one can do both things, all the senses at the same time, all the senses engaged. That is what we see when Narada Muni. When Narada Muni is getting the darshan of the Lord, all his senses become ecstatic, all of them. Manasastranindriyani, that means the five senses plus the mind, six senses. Sometimes the mind is also called one of the senses. So all these become enlivened. That is wakefulness, that one is completely awake. One is just completely absorbing the Lord, not just, I'm Krishna conscious. No, that one is ecstatically Krishna conscious. That one is beyond oneself Krishna conscious. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna conscious. He is Krishna consciousness personified. That is what Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not some sort of intellectual adjustment. Yes, I accept Krishna. Are you accepting Krishna as the Lord? Yes, I'm accepting Krishna. He's the Lord. He's the Lord. Okay. Then you are great. Thou is great. No. Real greatness is seen in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see that then there is not a Schattendurchbruch or something breaking through from the darkness, but then we see all darkness disappears. Then Ekeha Kurunandana, then only one focus on Krishna. And then we see what breaks too in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is this love of God. And it is said that the stage of love of God which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu experiences is the ultimate stage of love of God. It's said in early stages, love of God is known as Dumita. When love of God is Dumita, it is the smoking stage, not to be confused with smoking substances, but the Dumita stage is the stage where, like a smoldering fire, it is, when it's not really burning smoke and the wood is red hot, but it's smoldering and there is smoke. Then you get the Jwalita stage, the burning stage. There are more stages that I don't remember today, because I would have had to polish up my memory, look at my notes and just polish up the memory, which I didn't do. But then there's the final stage, which manifests in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that stage is, there's before that stage, there is a stage called Dipta. Dipta is enlightened stage. It is really burning. But then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's stage is intensely sudipta, the intensely blazing stage. So here his love of God is intensely blazing. Talking about awakened. He just sees a boy with a dark complexion and he is just gone. He is just seeing Krishna. He's just completely lost. He's just beyond himself. He's just completely overwhelmed just by that. He sees the ocean and he sees the Yamuna. He sees the Parvat hill and he just runs, thinking it is Govardhan. That kind of intensity
And then the body also follows in extraordinary ways. One day the Lord is gone, all the devotees are looking, and he is found amongst the cows. But he has become like, this is his kurma form, his kurma chaitanya, the tortoise. Kurma chaitanya is the form where Lord Chaitanya, where his limbs have entered into his body, and he's become virtually like a ball. And this big ball is lying there, and the cows are sniffing the ball. And when the devotees see the Lord like this, they can't believe it, but they want to go near, but the cows will not let them come near. No, no, he is ours. How nice. How amazing. How inconceivable. How extraordinary. So, what does it mean, pure consciousness? Certainly not that I'm strictly following the proper diet, and I'm definitely getting up at the right time every day, and I'm every day chanting very faithfully my 16 rounds and so on. That is all wonderful, but that's not pure consciousness. That is sadhaka. That is practitioner, practicing to come to pure Krishna consciousness. So let us go deep. Let us get absorbed. Let the Bhagavatam be our constant companion. Let us serve the deity. Let us serve the Vaishnavas. Let us, you know, as remembering the other day, before we got this useless EU passport, every country had its own passport, right? And I had a Dutch passport, and it was much better, and I tell you why it was much better. Because in the Dutch passport, there also was domicile, also place of residence was in there. And it happened to be so that for a while I was living in Vrindavan, and I had to apply for a new passport, so I had to give up place of residence, Vrindavan. And then I just kept it like that. And I made it a point to always get a new passport from Delhi so that I could keep Vrindavan as my place of residence in my passport. And it was really cool, right? For years, I had place of residence in my passport until they got stuck this EU passport, and no more place of residence, you know, in this passport, useless passport. And so now I have to, since then I had to internalize it. No longer just externally being reminded by my passport that I'm a resident of Vrindavan. I had to internalize it and remember that I'm a resident of Vrindavan. Because this is the fact, we are residents of Vrindavan, and wherever else we are in the world, we are tourists. Sure, it is very nice to see all these tourists here today, in this place in Sweden. Visitors, passing through only. Just passing through for a short time. It is very nice to see like this. Because we are residents of Vrindavan. That's home. And this consciousness has to grow deeper and deeper every day. More and more do we have to realize that our real home is Vrindavan. In this way, I mentioned the Panchanga Bhakti, the five principal limbs of Bhakti. Mathura Vas, Bhagavat Samad, Sadhu Sangha, Sri Murti, Sadhya Sevaya, and finally, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And in this way, one can very quickly awaken pure consciousness or Krishna prayer. Thank you very much. Any questions, comments?
Maharaj, you are still a resident of Vrindavan because Vrindavan has come to you in the form of pure. So wherever you go, carry.
You're kind. Vrindavan's coming to me in the form of the Vaishnavas, in the form of Srila Prabhupada.
That's it, in the form of Bhagavatam, in the form of the holy name. In this way, Vrindavan has come to me. Otherwise, I'm stubbornly turning away from that holy abode.
Yeah. I want to ask a question too, please. You had mentioned our absorption in the Bhagavatam and the personalities of the Bhagavatam, and then mm-hmm. you mentioned the Mahajans. Now, I've had personal experience trying to like glorify one of the Mahajans, and that Mahajan Shambhu, Shiva, yeah. and it appears there's a lot of controversy, confusion, difficulty in understanding how this Mahajan actually assists the devotee, mm-hmm. instructs the devotee, helps the devotee in actually developing the Krishna consciousness, and that sometimes when I focus on that Mahajan, then I'm even criticized for why you're doing that. Mm-hmm. It's like contrary to our Krishna conscious principles, because in Bhagavad Gita, you know, you're not supposed to go to the devatas.
Yeah. I think that maybe we should begin with a conversation between Srila Prabhupada and his godbrother Sridhar Maharaj, where they are discussing Shiva Tattva. I'm sure you are familiar with that conversation. And basically, Prabhupada's mood in that conversation is very generous. Is generously glorifying Lord Shiva. Said, Vaishnavam Yata Shambhu, such a wonderful devotee, such a Vaishnav, Lord Shiva, such a Vaishnav. Then Sridhar Maharaj, he says, yeah, but that is Sada Shiva. He says, that is Sada Shiva. He says, because the other Shiva, the Devata Shiva, he sometimes becomes the opponent of Krishna. He sometimes fights with Krishna and protects a demon, and it comes to a major fight. So he's not always acting as Vaishnava Yatash. And Prabhupada is agreeing, but not, let's say, not disagreeing. He's not disagreeing. Yes, sort of like that kind of yes. Yes, right. Yes. And then still carrying on. Such a nice Vaishnava. Vaishnava. That sort of summarizes the discussion. Then there are two scriptures which give a bit more insight on that matter. One is the Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami, and the other one is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita from Sanatana Goswami. And basically both are describing the nature of Shiva Tattva and are explaining that between the material, between Haridam and Devidam, between the material and spiritual world, there's the Viraja River. And it explains that the abode, that is an abode of Lord Shiva on the spiritual side of the Viraja River. And they refer to this as Shiva Loka. And that there's another abode of Lord Shiva, which is on the material side of the Viraja River, which is known as Kalash. It is said that the abode on the spiritual side of the Viraja River is known as the abode of Lord Sada Shiva, and that the abode on the material side is known as the abode of the Devata, Lord Shiva. And that Lord Sada Shiva is a direct expansion of Lord Mahavishnu, which we also find confirmed in Brahma Samhita. When we get that explanation, Saik Sata, that Mahavishnu is glancing upon the pradana, the unmanifested three modes of material nature. He glances, the glance then becomes Sada Shiva. He becomes that glance. and Sadashiva then touches the pradana and impregnates the pradana in that touch with the living beings. The three modes of nature become active, and then Yataladi Vikara Vishesa Yoga, then the transformation takes place of Shiva Tattva, which then means that Lord Sadashiva, who is otherwise Vishnu Tattva up to that point, transforms into Shiva Tattva. And Jiva Goswami writes in the Bhakti Sandarbha, like the glass of a lamp becomes covered by soot, by the black of the smoke, and the light is no longer coming through, although it's still there. So in this way, he looks at Shiva Tattva. So ultimately, we are appreciating all forms of Lord Shiva, because the demigod Shiva is also a greatly exalted personality. But our worshipable form of Lord Shiva is especially Lord Sadashiva. That is the form, because he is purely Vishnu Tattva, he is purely Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he is purely worshipping Lord Sankarshan himself. The first chapter of Vyuha, expansion of the Lord Vasudev, Sankarshan, Padyumna, Aniruddha, then the worshipable deity of. So it's interesting, he is Vishnu Tattva and yet worshipping Vishnu Tattva, which is not uncommon. We see Advaita. And then Advaita Acharya, he is both Mahavishnu, but he's also Sadashiva. So he comes, and therefore he's identified in some of the biographies as Shiva and some of the biographies as Mahavishnu. Chaitanya Charitamrita says Mahavishnu, Chaitanya Bhagavat says Lord Shiva. So it's very interesting then that Advaita Acharya is sort of that personality who is the same one who's that Shiva who is impregnated, put all the living beings in the material world, and then he's the one who also makes an arrangement for the living beings, because he's praying. He is praying for Lord Chaitanya to appear so that all living beings can love of God. If he would not have done so, not so sure that Lord Chaitanya would have appeared. Please.
Thank you. It's a very succinct explanation, and the focus is there on Sadashiva. Perhaps because you've resided in Vrindavan so long, you can answer this question also in regards to Advaita Acharya. I heard that at times, with the appearance of Advaita Acharya, that the various leaders in Vrindavan will go to Gopeshwar Mahadev. And also, the Gopeshwar Mahadev has a manifestation of Sadashiva and Advaita Acharya.
Yeah, certainly. Yes.
And Prabhupada mentions Gopeshwar Mahadev in several reports.
Yes. We can worship in that way, the Sadashiva. And in Mayapur also,
yes.
Before we begin our parikrama and so on.
You know, it's a big topic. I don't
want to. No, I understand. I just wanted to sort of explain that tattva and then.
You explained it very nicely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here is one more.
Yeah, here's also one. But that one is coming. He's in queue.
You mentioned during the lecture about the functions of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing. And I'm thinking there is also the heart. It's explained the heart has the same functions, thinking, feeling, willing. I mean, it's feeling. What is the difference between mind and heart?
What is the difference between the thinking, feeling, and willing happening in the mind and the thinking, feeling happening in the heart? Now, in the initial state, as we are conditioned, well, let me explain a little better. Originally, thinking, feeling, and willing happens on the level of the soul. That is the real level of the heart. Then when we come to the material world, the mind imitates the functions of the heart. And although it makes us believe that it is the heart that is now thinking, feeling and willing. It's the mind. And I'm in love. Oh my God. I'm over the moon. I'm flying. It is so beautiful. Oh, morning dew, glistening like diamonds. And the sunlight is just representing the rays that come from your eyes. Oh, stars, oh, poetry, oh, birds, oh, love, oh, rivers that flow like the tears from my eyes when I think of you. All these things is the mind. Oh no, it's a bitter pill to swallow. Gosh, so early in the morning. It's all written off to the mind. Oh yes, Romeo. Oh yes, Juliet. It's just, you're on the mental platform.
Get off the mental platform, will ya?
Yeah, but Nietzsche said the Krishna Prem, Sadhu Kabunai, Sravanani Sudha Chitta Karya Udai, that gradually there is the awakening through devotional service, hearing and chanting, of real feelings from the heart.
So when we say I lost my heart in Vrindavan, what is that?
It can, in the initial stage, when I see it on the t-shirt, it looks to me still like the mind.
Yeah.
I mean, when I see those t-shirts, I wonder about it, you know, if they really lost their heart. But if you really lose your heart in Vrindavan, then, you know, it's an awakening. But that means you are always in Vrindavan. When you lose your heart in Vrindavan, that means you're always in Vrindavan. And then you act like Vrindavan means, fully for the pleasure of the Lord. So if you lost your heart in Vrindavan, it means you act 100% for the pleasure of the Lord. You think for the pleasure of your Lord. You feel for the pleasure of the Lord. That's what it means when you lost your heart in Vrindavan. Completely for the pleasure of the Lord. That's no small statement. That's why I don't wear that t-shirt. I can't wear it. I haven't lost my heart at Vrindavan. I've lost my heart. I should cut off that Vrindavan, but I lost my heart. That should be my t-shirt.
People have told me you have no heart.
It's true. I lost it long ago. Oh my God. I hope you can sleep tonight. Maybe you lost your heart also. Oh no. I lost my heart. Krishna Balaram, Anant is in queue. Yes.
Yeah, I would like to ask, you spoke about the stage of Dumita, and can be said that it's kind of preliminary stage of love of Godhead?
It is already love of God,
yes.
Dumita.
And it's kind of Krishna's energy, and in this kind of sense, it's not separate from the Lord, right? It's like form of the Lord. And if it's that correct, it's asakti, full attachment to this higher taste, what comes arising from this?
Okay. Dumita is a stage of Krishna Prem. So it's gone beyond Ashakti, it's gone beyond Bhava, it's gone to the stage of Krishna Prem. But even within Krishna Prem, there are different levels. Dumita is a stage where the love of God is very deep, and one is constantly absorbed in love of God. But in the Dumita stage, one can still hide the feelings. One can still hide the feelings of love of God. In the stage of Sudipta, like in the stage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was no question. It was just bursting out like a volcano. But it's not that the stage of Dumita is any less. I mean, it is a stage of love of God. It's love of God. It's just full. Full absorption.
But if, for example, Madhema Adhikari experienced some higher taste already.
Yeah, but this is way beyond. This is uttam. Uttam. Madhyam, chala gaya, uttam. Uttam. Completely. Ananta.
I try to connect a little bit the statement you said, the existential root.
Yeah, when I went into the financial root, I don't know what to make of that.
No. And then the blazing, the blazing fire level of Lord Chaitanya, with the statement yesterday you're mentioning Milarepa, the Tibetan yogi.
Yeah. Who was eating only grass.
Yeah, and then he was the grass was his only nourishment, and then it went like radiate through his body, the grass chlorophyll or something. And I was thinking, if we see the holy name as the only nourishment in this material plane we are living on. Because you said Milarepa ate grass for 40 years.
Okay.
So if we see the holy name as the only nourishment, it should also radiate through us like a blazing fire of...
Yeah. Sounds nice. Okay, and now that you're referring to Milarepa and that I said he ate grass for 40 years, I mean, and that he turned green, that's what his biography said. It's just a detail, that sort of colorful detail.
No, that was
that I remembered.
Yeah.
But of course, our acharyas have eaten clay, you know. Mm-hmm. Lord Vasudeva's Babaji is known to eat clay, so we don't want to minimize him for eating grass.
Mm-hmm.
But my point yesterday was that austerity is not needed to be of that kind of extreme nature. So I took it from a platform of austerity. Now that you're making a comparison with the holy name, sure. There is a story about that Arjuna was sleeping, but that Arjuna at the same time was not covered by the mode of ignorance. And it said that his hair was chanting. Now, I don't remember where the story is from, unfortunately. I can't... and maybe a version of Mahabharata, but I can't be sure. I just don't remember. But it said his hair was chanting. So one can become completely absorbed, so much in chanting, that was always chanting. When Balaram started chanting Krishna's name, he became black. I mean, he was seriously absorbed. Now, those were good rounds, you know. Those are good rounds. So let us chant some good rounds also. Okay, last one. Two, okay.
Some technical question. It's about, actually you mentioned about four Kumaras, they are at the same time in the spiritual world and in Papaloka.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, Krishna Lila, he's killing, for example, Putana, he's killing Putana.
Who's playing Putana?
No, Krishna is killing Putana.
Yeah.
And it means that he's killing Putana in every universe, everywhere where he is. Like, is it the same Putana traveling?
No, not the same. When Krishna is killing these demons, it's not just that the same personality is traveling with him and is being killed. It's like, you know, in the spiritual world, and now we have to perform this drama again, okay. Putana, yeah, sorry, but, you know, stop being Krishna's mother. You know, you gotta be a witch again. No, just find another witch. There's enough witches. No shortage of witches. So there's always a witch to play the part. There's no difficulty. Yes.
You were speaking about intensity of love of Lord Chaitanya, and there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita it's mentioned how Vrijavasis, they are missing Krishna and their love is so intense. I'm wondering, maybe not all the jivas are so have so intense feeling, like I doubted that I'm so advanced, like in advanced stage,
uh-huh.
In pure consciousness.
Uh-huh. She's saying that I described Lord Chaitanya, she's mentioning Brihad Bhagavatamrita and how the Vrajavasis were so filled with love. And that she's saying, but maybe not everyone is so filled with love. That is Vraja Bhakti. In Vraja Bhakti, when Uddhava came there, he was amazed to see how all the residents had this intense love. This is the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, by being part of this movement, we're going to get it. We're going to get it. You too. Who knows what will come? We will see. We will see how that love will manifest. That's what we want to see. That's the exciting part. When everyone starts to go mad with love of God, then we'll be laughing. We'll laugh. Look at him. Right? Look at her. We'll laugh. We'll laugh at you, but with love. Right? To see such ecstasy.
But devotees hiding, they love
it. Yeah, but you can't hide it anymore. It just comes out. And together, we all let it out. We'll close the doors, and then we'll have kirtan like Sri Vasanga. It will all come out. All that comes out. Okay, thank you, thank you. Oh no, come on, give a man a break.
If one commits offenses, even in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, is this still some hope Vaishnava Parada, for example?
If you start to commit big offenses, we will not allow you. We will hit you over the head. Don't worry, we'll get you. We'll go after you and say, hey, you, stop this nonsense. So, therefore, all you get away with is little sneaky offenses. And of course, that you'll do. That you'll do. You'll take full advantage of those loopholes. With all those sneaky offenses. And that holds you back a bit. But when you get too much, when the Putana comes out, we will get on your case. I hope you can take this answer. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.